This is an ABC podcast.
I've seen this movie before, that one ends in tears. I can tell you exactly what happened.
It's early days.
They don't get it and they don't seem to care.
I'm not, you know, miserable or bitter or resentful.
A government that is bitterly divided.
We've got to raise the standards of journalism a little bit here.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of The Party Room. I'm Fran Kelly from RN Breakfast.
You are, and I'm Patricia Carvelis from RN Drive. And yes, this is a special extra episode of The Party Room where we're recapping that 1 hour special on Q&A on ABC TV with Malcolm Turnbull, the former Prime Minister. His first interview, and it's an interview with punters, with voters, with people on the floor asking him questions about losing his prime ministership. Now, he used it, Fran, very much to defend his legacy. Clearly, that's one of the main reasons he wanted to do this. He was very keen to talk about his legacy, but it did not, Fran, it did not take him long to name names and to put the onus back on those he calls the insurgents, the plotters, for the madness. He still referred to the madness, which was the end of his prime ministership.
It really never occurred to me that senior members of the government, particularly people with such solemn responsibilities. You know, Peter Dutton is the Home Affairs Minister, responsible for Australia's national security, for heaven's sake, domestic security. Matthias Cormann, you know, the leader of the government in the Senate. Greg Hunt, the Health Minister. Stephen Chobo, our Trade Minister.
Who you promoted into Cabinet.
Yeah, sure, and there's plenty of others, but never occurred to me that those people would act in a way that was going to be so damaging both to the government, to the party, you know, and frankly, to the nation.
PK, Peter Dutton, Tony Abbott, Greg Hunt, Matthias Cormann. That wasn't the only time, the one and only time we heard those names from Malcolm Turnbull's lips last night. So, yes, I agree with you. He came really to set his legacy out because he's only really had one chance to do that up until now, and that was at his farewell press conference. He wanted to get that legacy, claim that legacy on the record, but he also very much wanted to point the finger and to get something off his chest, I think, to name those he obviously feels very wounded by the role, not just of Peter Dutton, but Greg Hunt and Matthias Cormann in particular, I think. And they got name checked a number of times during the 1 hour, didn't they?
They certainly did. So his style was very relaxed. You know, the leather jacket didn't come out. A lovely suit was worn instead. He looked, you know, really relaxed. He kept his tone really, you know, he talked about being joyful. He used the word joyful for crying out loud, but
he did look resolved, I thought. I mean, unlike last time when he lost the leadership the first time when he was opposition leader and it was clearly, you know, played psychological havoc with him, this time he really did look, I think, much more resolved about that and the pain of that, I suppose. And he made the point of saying that, you know, that was why he spent so long in New York. He went there to get out of the sphere of this and to try and work on his own self. He made the point that it takes a personal toll and he needed to work on that was one of the justifications he gave for not walking back into and helping out more on the Wentworth by-election.
Yes, and on that, if I could just also mention, he on the Wentworth by-election, where some Conservatives have blamed him, Malcolm Turnbull, for not helping Dave Sharma in the dying days of that campaign, he actually blamed the Scott Morrison government. He named the, you know, it's okay to be white vote. He mentioned, of course, the moving of the embassy, the Australian embassy in Israel, as the reasons, and actually Barnaby Joyce as well for, you know, saying he was interested in becoming Nationals leader again and talking about, you know, a new coal-fired power plant in an electorate, he said, which is interested in climate change and, you know, cares about climate change. He named those issues for why the party had lost that seat. So really clearing his name or trying to clear his name for being responsible for that and putting it squarely with the Morrison government. I thought that was an interesting aside where he was trying to really, you know, repair some of the mud that's been thrown at him over the last few weeks about the Wentworth by-election loss. But more interestingly, what he's done here is, yes, he wants to talk about his own legacy. He's so keen to bring it back to that all the time, you know, constantly keen to do that. But he has made life very difficult for nine people that he named, because every time they front up, Fran, and already, you know, I think Matthias Cormann spoke, and there's probably others by the time people listen to this podcast, every time they're interviewed, instead of Scott Morrison's line that this is a Labor Party question to ask about why did you do this, he has enabled people to, again, put that question to the government serving cabinet ministers of why did they blow up the government. He also blamed the instability caused by the coup leaders that he named as making other ordinary MPs vote for change because they wanted to end the, you know, the uncertainty and the insurgency. So he talked about this kind of chaos and then sort of, you know, very Malcolm Turnbull-like, you know, throwing these truth bombs. They were littered throughout this hour, just little truth bombs everywhere. You know, analysis of the small L Liberal side of the Liberal Party being essentially suffocated by these conservative right-wingers of the party, talking about, you know, losing crucial seats in Dye, talking about Wentworth, talking about Mayo in Adelaide as those seats being lost because people are concerned in those seats the small L Liberal side of his party is just not doing what it's meant to do.
Yeah, he did. He built a few of those cats, and that's going to cause problems for Scott Morrison too, which I must stress, I think Malcolm Turnbull went out of his way to not cause too many problems for Scott Morrison last night, but he did drop some of those, as you say, truth bombs, in particular that one about what really happened in the Wentworth campaign in the last week, putting that fair and squarely on this on the Morrison government, where the line, the narrative coming out of the government so far has been, well, our polling shows something completely different. So there's a few of those things. But he, I think what was interesting about him putting this question of, you know, why he was rolled onto these four names again and again, what was interesting to me was how live the question still was from the audience. It was a very a civil audience, very courteous, I thought, by and large, not entirely, as we'll hear in a minute. But they wanted to know what went on, who did he blame, what happened. So as far as that being a Labor question, which, as you say, is Scott Morrison's retort at the moment, it's pretty clear that this is a question that is still very alive for the broader electorate. And I think that would have heartened Malcolm Turnbull to some degree.
Yeah, you're right, Fran. He did, you know, he got sort of, it was a warm room, that's for sure. And some of the questions he got, they were largely, I thought, quite positive or at least affectionately
generous.
Yeah, they were generous, absolutely, you know. And many people have the analysis that that's why he chose this forum. Let's just call it for what it is, that he's always performed well in the Q&A audience, that this is kind of how he built himself as a leader, really, over the many years. He's always performed well in this space in a sort of one-on-one interview. Things could have been very different after for Malcolm Turnbull. But he didn't get off scot-free. He was asked a few curly questions, including this one from Louise.
Early on, I thought you had a vision for Australia. I saw you as a potentially great leader, intelligent and economically wise. I was sadly disappointed with your time in office. You were ineffectual, not able to make the hard decisions nor confront the media to argue your case. Unengaged with the public and biding your time towards the end. I would like you to take responsibility and not blame anyone else for this. You had the opportunity and you blew it.
You had the opportunity and you blew it.
I think with that question, you know, Louise really put a finger on what people had been saying about Malcolm Turnbull's leadership for a couple of years, which is that he came in, as you say, with that Q&A vibe, that leather jacket vibe around him. People thought they were getting one leader with one set of values and one view of the world, and they don't felt that they saw that enough from Malcolm Turnbull when he was Prime Minister. Now, some of his answers since then and again last night went some way to explaining that. He thought he needed to come back the second time as leader and bring the whole party room with him, and that was why he sort of moved to bring the right along and not just, you know, denounce their views on the world. But he, you know, he was a disappointment to very many people who at the start of his leadership, you know, the country was right behind him, and he lost that gloss very quickly. He doesn't acknowledge that. He doesn't recognise that, I don't think. He rejects that assertion, though, Patricia.
He does reject it because, again, going back to the point we started off with, it's all about legacy. And he, you know, one of the things that, you know, and I was texting some MPs, I'm sure lots of people were throughout it, people were watching, some taped it because they couldn't watch it live. A lot of them watched it, though, let me tell you. And many were saying, you know, yes, he's done well, those acknowledging that actually, you know, it could have been worse for them. It could have also been worse for Malcolm Turnbull. But ultimately, he didn't actually concede that he'd done anything wrong. he didn't actually say, yep, could have played that differently. Yep, no, there was actually no mea culpas at all that I could see.
In fact,
see.
He claims some things as things he's done very right, which others might take issue with and will take issue with. And when he listed his legacy, he, of course, has in that the same-sex marriage vote, which he says, well, it happened under my prime ministership. That's what history will show. That's what I did. A lot of people see it differently.
A lot of people see it very differently. In fact, they say, you know, this was the community did this. There was a movement here, a very long one that did this. And in fact, the hurt caused by the plebiscite, and that was you know, something that he actually, the architecture of getting there was something, a deal he did with the right. I mean, that was the way they wanted to get there, because they wanted to have this big public vote. So either way, he will argue, and he did argue, that it happened under his watch. And, you know, history, there can be lots of history wars and debates about that. Ultimately, it did happen under his prime ministership. That is a fact. Whether, you know, people feel good about it or not, that's a whole different question, I suppose. But either way, I found that he's very keen to ensure that nobody rips apart his ongoing, place in the history books, that he's very keen not to be torn down or to be made sort of the rat of the Liberal Party. He doesn't want to be that person. He, in fact, was asked a question, what kind of ex-Prime Minister do you want to be? Do you want to be a Gillard? Do you want to be an Abbott? Do you want to be a Rudd? You know, and he didn't give an answer in terms of a name, but the behaviour he described was Gillard-esque, I thought.
Big, he doesn't want to be a miserable ghost. In fact, he made a point of basically signalling that he's got a lot of life left in him and he's not going to be hanging around politics being a partisan bomb thrower. He's got a positive view of his future, and it's all about, well, business, really.
Yeah, he's like, what can I invest in?
Making money.
Give me great ideas. I love new investments. It was all, I love it when he gets all Mr. Burns with his fingers.
It was a bit of a venture capital pitch, wasn't it?
Now, Fran, big question, and it's a huge one, I reckon. The big Scott Morrison question. He was asked, essentially, you know, my version of what he was asked was, were Scott Morrison's hands clean in coming to power? How do you think he answered that? And does Scott Morrison come out okay out of that answer?
Look, I think Scott Morrison comes out okay of the answer. I did note a pause, a bit of a pregnant pause before he answered that. But I think actually he'd made up his mind before this that whatever he was asked, he was not going to pick a fight with Scott Morrison. And he basically, with a number of different versions of that question that were pitched at him last night, he dodged, and he believes Scott Morrison when he said Scott Morrison, you know, supported him and Scott Morrison was not involved in this. So he really gave Scott Morrison a pass on this, I think. Is that how you saw it?
Oh, look, he broadly gave him a pass and it was very deliberately delivered. He made a decision clearly going into that Q&A hour that he wasn't going to be responsible for looking like he was tearing down a prime minister. He's very keen for that to be the way he's seen and the way he conducts himself. He says he's not going to be throwing bombs, you know, all the way to the campaign. He did actually, though, I think, give a pretty bad report card to the government, which was essentially he suggested there's no way they could win unless there was some sort of, you know, major turnaround, which he clearly doesn't think is going to happen. I mean, he really said Bill Shorten is the biggest beneficiary here. And in fact, he revealed his conversations with Kerry Stokes, which was a report that came out a couple of months ago, remember, Fran? But he did reveal all those conversations with Rupert Murdoch.
Basically backing up Andrew Probyn's story, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, I thought, quite interesting as well, that he just put that all out on the table and talked about that.
I thought the other big reveal was very early on he put on the table what is usually kept private Liberal Party polling that was done in the last few weeks of his prime ministership, which he says showed that in the marginal seat polling, 40 seats he said polled, they did this regularly, it showed that the government was ahead on that polling. Just ahead, but ahead nevertheless. And given the public polls showed that they were just behind, he said that proved they were in a winnable position. So, in other words, that bolstered his case of what were these people doing? Why did they do it? It's beyond understanding. Why would they blow up a government that, according to him, the polling show had a good chance of winning again? Big question.
It is a big question. Already, you know, we know that Craig Kelly came out within literally seconds of that interview, Craig Kelly being one of the backbenchers who really made life pretty difficult for Malcolm Turnbull. and you know, you'd say one of the unnamed because he was too junior, but not important enough to be named by Malcolm Turnbull, but an insurgent, you know, nonetheless, saying, nah, we were better off, you know, we weren't going to win under him. So these competing narratives, I suppose, from the people who rolled him and he himself and his supporters. Already also,
We should just point out what Craig Kelly's answered. He's the only person really so far who has answered that question lately about why. And he said, well, Malcolm Turnbull set his own KPI. It was 30 negative news polls and he reached that. So that was one thing. And then the Longman result was another thing and the botched expectation management around that. So that's the answer Craig Kelly gave last night.
Yeah, that's the answer he gave. But okay, so Malcolm does his interview. Malcolm Turnbull does his interview. Then it's the fallout. Now, we're recording this Friday morning as a recap to give you all our analysis, but there will be more fallout. Already I know that Christopher Pyne, who was a supporter of Malcolm Turnbull, so wasn't on the, you know, rolling side of the fence, said that those who were named for being responsible for rolling him as Prime Minister need to be, and I quote, responsible for their actions. So it's not just Malcolm Turnbull calling for those people to be held accountable. It's current serving frontbenchers referring to, Fran, which I think is extraordinary, other serving cabinet ministers. These people are still in cabinet. Greg Hunt
named. These tensions are still in cabinet.
This is all still there. So it brings us to the, as we kind of get to the conclusion here, what's next? Is the Malcolm Turnbull story over? Will he be a miserable ghost hanging around all the way to, you know, the big day in 2019 where voters get to decide what they think of this government and its three prime ministers that it's had over 5 years? What happens in that time frame? He doesn't want to be seen as a miserable ghost. He doesn't want to be seen as a wrecker. He's made that clear. But is it kind of inevitable? Because the questions he's raised mean that more questions are asked. And this is not clear air for Scott Morrison, as he says he wanted to provide.
I think that's true. I think by and large, that was not a wrecking performance last night. I think it was more subdued than perhaps some would have expected. And who knows, some might have hoped. But he did leave a few of those, as you called them earlier, truth bombs. That one about the polling, which sort of counters the narrative of the ones whose names he named last night. But also the point about the Liberals, that the small L Liberal base is being ignored and it must be included if they have any chance of winning. And also another one, I think, on energy, and that's, of course, the bete noire of Malcolm Turnbull, and he thinks the issue that the coalition is incapable of dealing with. And he answered very firmly on that when he was talked about the future for coal and climate policy. And he said very firmly, look, it's obvious to anybody where the future lies. It is renewable plus storage, and that the economics of coal-fired power station, of building a new one, do not stack up. And this truth he's now put on the table, which is directly counter to the soundings we're getting from the current Energy Minister, Angus Taylor, even as recently as today, Angus Taylor saying indicating the government is of a mind to directly fund or support or prop up somehow coal-fired power. So I think he's made some things uncomfortable for Scott Morrison, but he did not seek to wreck or undermine particularly Scott Morrison's leadership last night, in my view.
Yeah, I think that's true. Finally, though, I think there was an element of he was on his best behaviour not to sound like a snipey wrecker. He doesn't want to seem like a snipey wrecker. He doesn't like the way Kevin Rudd conducted himself. He does not like the way Tony Abbott conducted himself. So he doesn't want to be that person. Whether some of his colleagues think he is, you know, by the by, he doesn't want to be that person. But ultimately, there was an element, Fran, I just have to say it, this is how I see it, of look at me, you could have had me. Look at me. And there was, you know, warmth in the room. There was that kind of, you know, you see your ex, they're really, you know, they're still really attractive and smart and wonderful. A few of his colleagues have made that joke to me. It's that kind of, you know, I'm still, look at me, I've left the parliament. I'm not available to you anymore. But gee, I was good, wasn't I? Didn't you feel some of that?
I couldn't possibly comment, Patricia. And on that note, as they say in the classics, only time will tell.
See you, Fran.
See you, PK.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.